Well, after a song like that, I think we could very well have a word of prayer and just a benediction. It's a tremendous song and sung by Joyce with a real message. And I was thinking I wish we could keep that in mind as we conclude tonight and as we go our way. This song that she had just sung. I appreciate very much the sweater. That's terrific. And also the other things that accompany it. When I was young, it was sort of, for me, it was kind of wine, women, and song. Now that I am middle-aged, it's Metrical, that same old gal, and sing along with Mitch. I appreciate these very much, too. I was in Scotland with the Graham team where this game was invented. I heard that there was a sign on the Scots golf course: members will refrain from picking up lost balls until they have stopped rolling. I came back from my last trip overseas a little bit pooed, and in order to explain that, I have used a little story that I guess perhaps you heard about the golfer who came home on Wednesday evening, which afternoon, Wednesday was a day for golf. His wife asked him how the golf game went. And if you've heard this, don't stop me. And he said, oh, it was terrible. It was the worst day of golf I have ever had. She said, well, why, what happened? He said, well, I got out to the golf course and went to the back of the trunk to get the clubs, and they weren't there. Apparently someone had borrowed them and not replaced them, so I had to go all the way back downtown to the office to get the clubs, came all the way back out, and of course we missed our starting time, and so my golfing partners were upset with me. We had to wait before we could tee off, and so we just got off to a bad start. Then he said, where we were, we played the first two holes, and we were on the third tee, and Charlie died of a heart attack. And he said, from there on, it just went from bad to worse. He said, you had to hit the ball and then drag Charlie. You hit the ball and then drag Charlie. Well, on that trip, I sometimes felt it was have a meeting and drag Sandy. Have a meeting and drag Sandy. So Sandy ended up dragging. Well, I hope to get to use these. Thank you very, very much. Tonight, I thought I'd just leave a few thoughts on the greatest subject in the world. Love. I suppose that all of you, I hope all of you, are going home with some things written down in your notebook or else written carefully in your heart, things you'd like to do differently when you get home, certain things you want to put into practice as a husband, as a wife, as a parent. I know for me, it's good for me to travel because you leave home and you get away and you begin to think back and that you pushed that young one off and didn't listen when he really had something to say, as you look back on it now and you feel kind of badly about it. And then you begin to make little notes about things that are going to be different when you get back. And I hope that's what we all have. I think, as I've said before and others have pointed out, that's a purpose for a conference like this. Some very specific things that we're going to do that will be different. But on the subject of love, I just want to make a few comments on love in the family. I don't think that you need any kind of great message or more information. But what I have to say is more by way of stimulation on that list that I hope you have, and if you don't have it, to start it, either now or on the way home. Love in the family, of course, is our greatest need, isn't it? The husband's job, as I see it in the New Testament, is to provide for his family, to manage, and to teach. But above all, that is to be done in an atmosphere of love, isn't it? Love. Wife's great responsibility, to love her husband, love her children. Children need love. They need love before they need anything else. A child might be lost in the woods and been lost for days before found, but the child's first need is not food. That could be given him in the garage. The child's first need is his mother, its parent. And we have seen reunions where their arms around the parent's neck. That's the first need for that child, isn't it? Love. I remember reading some years ago an article in the medicine section of Time magazine that babies do not live by milk alone. And they pointed out a test that were made on orphan babies where half of them were fed, they were all fed by the bottle, half of them the bottle was propped up, and the other half they were held in the arms while they were fed. And after some months of testing on this, they felt that they could see a very distinct difference between those who were held in the arms while being fed as opposed to those that the bottle was propped up. When I read that, we got busy trying to make up for it. Some of the kids where we'd prop the bottle. But they need love. Now, love, as we know, is in the Bible an act of the will. God does not command us to feel certain ways. He commands us to do certain things. And we are, love is a command. But it seems to me that our songs and all the rest have so gotten us completely distorted that we fail to realize that love is an act of the will. Not primarily a matter of feeling. That follows, but not precedes, necessarily. It's an act of the will whereby we must take action. Do something. And I think it involves a readiness to give and receive. And I think both are necessary. Love will graciously receive as graciously give. And there are some people that make it exceedingly difficult for you to do anything for them. I think it's a reciprocal thing and it's an exchange thing. Now this little outline that I have for my talk tonight is a 2-point outline. I tucked it in the other night on a message, but it's too good to leave it like that. And it's simply this, that love does two things. Love binds and love builds. In Colossians 3:14, and above everything, put on love. Or above all these things, put on love, which binds everything together in perfect harmony. It binds. And it also builds. 1 Corinthians 8:1 says, knowledge puffs up, but love builds up. Love binds. Doesn't it seem to you that many, many things conspire to break up the family, to fragmentize it? The centrifugal forces are there to blow it apart, it seems like. The very society in which we live. And I think as I travel around the world a little, that our American society particularly seems to just trend toward the disintegration of the family unit. And as you know how I feel about this, that we're paying for it in some of our sociological complications today. Or you take just our modern society. Dad goes off somewhere to a job. He isn't working on the farm or in the store downstairs where the family live upstairs. And the kids don't have the remotest idea of what Dad does. And sometimes the wife has little more. So he goes off into a world of his own. And in fact, there's an effort to keep those worlds apart in some instances. And I can see where part of that's good and part of it's bad. Or you take the family car or cars, all going off in different directions again. Or take television. I think that TV is probably the greatest divider of the family that we have in the household. There is no fellowship around the TV set. All you get there, somebody talks up, is somebody goes, shh! Be quiet! They may be in the same room, but there's nothing binding them together. They're physically glued on the boob tube, and I don't think that this is conspiring to help bring the family together. Our school system, in some respects, and even our church. We have a men's Bible class, we have the women's Bible class, the men's brotherhood, the women's brotherhood. The kids go off here, and I shared with some this afternoon. One lady was telling me over in Iowa, she said, "My church has helped to break up my family." And she said, "I'm happy for a couples ministry where my husband and I can do something together." Now, we must counteract this. We must bind. Love would take action to bind the household together. And you have to work at it. Now, I don't mean tying the kids to the apron strings. I don't mean this at all. And I don't know about you, but at least for us and our kids, we try to figure out ways and places to send them for the summer. Or a good part of it, as early as possible, to get them used to this. We don't want them tied to mother's apron strings. I'm not talking about this. But I am talking about some things. For instance, to corral the family for devotions. Depends on the age of the kids, of course, when you do this. But suppose the only time, the only meal you have together is in the evening. Well, this one goes dashing off to this school activity. They've got to hurry up so they can go there. This one wants you to hurry up because they've got their favorite TV program. Somebody has to take the initiative to corral the family and say, "Now, wait a minute. Let's figure this out. I want you to know, and this is Dad, that we're going to have 10 minutes after dessert for family devotions. Now, either we're going to have to move the meal hour up, or we're going to have to forgo the program, but this, we've got to work this out. Now, don't plan anything before lesson. Some action has to be taken." Now, I grant here, of course, that the devotional hour, the quiet time, or with the family together, ought to be something that is enforced, and that's a whole different subject. All I'm saying is that we need to take the initiative to corral, to bind this household. And it is true about praying together. If you can't do it then, before you go to bed, if you can't do it then, find some time. And not just say, "Oh, well, we can never do it." I think we must take action and work on this thing and not just give up. Or take the matter of family projects that help bind the household together. I suppose you may have done this. I know for us, we wanted a stereo in the house, and when are you going to get the money for a stereo? So, well, okay, we'll forego presents this year, and we'll put everything into one pot and get a stereo. Well, that's the family project. Or another thing, and I don't like to mention this one because I don't like it myself, but working around the house. And I've had a nasty attitude about that endless list of do things. Repair this, do that. And the other day my son said, I was working out in the yard, "You know, Dad, I think you've got a green thumb." In fact, he said, "I think you've got five of them on each hand." Well, it's amazing what a 21-year-old boy learned in college and when he comes back. Now, if you want organizational charts drawn up, I can do that. But fix a screen door that's sticking? I don't know. And it seems like my wife's do list is a bottomless pit. It is endless. There would be no possibility, if she were a polygamist and had five husbands, to get it all done. And I'll confess to you, I resented that thing. Would you please quit bugging me? And then I find that there's also attached to that a little feeling of self-importance. After all, I've got a big job. Why don't I do things that other people can't do, and a lot of people can do that stuff? It took me years to learn that what I was saying by my attitude to my wife and my family is, what I do is important. What you do around here is not important. So, I can't do much, but I call up John for a little help, a little advice, here and there. But you know, to my, I was going to say amazement, almost dismay, my kids like to see me working around the place. Yeah, it helps kind of, well, they didn't say to me, Daddy, you know, I like seeing you working around here. Kind of makes them feel like they're a family. Boy, it took me a long time to see that. Took me a long time. Work around the place. Some of you know my brother Leonard out in California, well, in Delhi. His second boy, Mike, stayed with us for 2 days just before this boys' camp. I can tell that there is a boy that his dad has taught how to work. I don't know when I've had a kid 14 years old in our home that saw the things to do and offered to do them than Mike did. I like to start all over on my kid. It's just too late. I just rejoice in the fact and comfort myself in the fact that they do seem to work hard for other people, but they didn't seem to do too much at home. But family projects, or take family excursions. Dr. Edmund, the president of Wheaton College, before he died, I remember talking with him about his kids and what he did and did not do. And he said one thing he would do, he'd take them on more family excursions, special events. And I suppose that the most outstanding experience to this in my own experience along this line was some years ago when I was talking with a pastor friend of ours in Norfolk, Virginia, the Downings known him, John Dunlap. He was telling me about a boy that they had who stuttered. And my youngest boy, sort of a minor stutter, but I was interested in this. So he told me how he had taken his boy to a doctor and who talked with him and made some tests and one thing and another. And after a couple of weeks, he called Reverend Dunlap in and he said, to give him his report, and he said, I believe the reason this boy stutters is you. I think you are the cause for this stutter. So what do you mean? Well, he said, there you are. You're the pastor of a growing church. You have a radio program. You have a Christian school in conjunction with it that you are putting on. All this pressure that you live under is going over on that boy. And he stutters. You ought to take that boy away. When do you ever take him out and do something with him? You ever take him camping? So they got a little 16-foot camper trailer and headed up to Canada. And then he was telling me how that they'd been up there for a couple of weeks, and one day they were sitting, both of them, at the foot of a tree, backs leaned up against the tree, talking. And it dawned on him that his boy was talking without a stutter. And along about the time he thought that, and realized this, the boy looked up at him and said, gee, Dad, thanks for bringing us. Well, I came home. The navigators owned a 33-foot trailer. We got it traded in for the 16-foot trailer we've got over here. And borrowed it back. You know, that's the way you work these little deals. and hooked it up and headed out looking for campgrounds. It took me too long to learn that. Buying, we must take some action to buying the household, the family together. And I don't mean by that that we shelter them or tie them in, but we need to take action. Love binds together and brings together in perfect harmony. And that is quite a remarkable thing today, I think, in this day when you get into homes and they're at one another and they're bickering and all that goes on. Talking about excursions, I come back from overseas and I see where people don't have much, you know, and then I come to my house, and for instance, our kids would never dream of taking a drink of water. You know, you've got to be Pop, you've got to be Tab or Fresca or something. You know, once in a while, they say, oh, I'm thirsty. Where is it? Do you have any Tab? Have you ever considered water? No. They've never invented a cheap substitute for water yet that I know. And I get a little, and after just after I get back from a trip, I get a little irked. Well, they hadn't been on the trip. I was the guy that was on the trip. That's number one, and I seem to forget rather quickly myself. But it occurred to me, wouldn't it be a great excursion if you could find a missionary to the Indians in New Mexico or Arizona and take your kids and spend a couple days out in an Indian village? You ever done that? We got to do that one time. You know, you could see right in New Mexico and Arizona some of the same kind of hovels and huts and the kind of thing that you'd see in South America or India. And this kind of thing, the kids wouldn't forget, would they? We went and we had an adventure together. Love binds. And those are some practical thoughts on how we can take action to bind the household together. I know example on this. I can only give you illustrations from my own experience. And as I look around, I see John. I see some things he does. And some things I know others do. Well, let's keep on it. Let's keep at it. And then love builds. Just as there is a tendency to fragmentize in the family and split apart that spirit and all, so in love, instead of building up one another, there always seems to be the tendency to tear down. Families, husband, wife, children seem to wear one another down. I think often of the little kid that says, Mom, why is it that when you're tired, I take the nap? Oh, true, huh? Well, that's not exactly the kind of wearing down I'm talking about here. I'm talking about tearing down. For instance, ridicule. How dumb. I walked into a home not long ago, and a little kid had pulled a dumb one. The man, senior person in the house, said, would you like to look at an idiot? You know, he tore my heart out. What it's doing to that little kid? He had a big old bruise there where he knew he'd boo-booed. He didn't have to have somebody come in that was not part of his family, but whom he knew, and say, would you like to see an idiot? Ooh, that just tears her down inside. Cutting remarks. Or you get into a car with somebody, or you're in a family, and you just, meow, you know, meow, catty, catty, tearing, clawing. It tears down, doesn't it? And I'm sure that there are a lot of people today, and I have some sympathy with those who feel they are nothing. They've been made to feel that they're nothing. So they try to be something with the leather jacket and the motorcycle. Or try to be something with a knife or a gun with some authority. I think there's something to be said there. Love doesn't tear down. Love builds up, doesn't it? And we should take action to help build up our spouse, our husband, our wife, our children. And I just have a couple of suggestions. And one is to encourage. Encourage. And I just thought of another one. Last year I was down in Brazil and I visited our NAB representatives there, and I had spent, a week with them. As I got to the airport, Jim Peterson said to me, "Lauren, I appreciated the visit. I want to tell you what meant most to me about it." Well, I appreciate that. And so he said to me, he said, "You give me the guts to go on. That's the big thing you did for me." He said, "I appreciate the suggestions, the help, but basically you give me the guts to go on." You know what I think of my wife? She does that. She encourages me. She gives me the guts to go on. But that's a two-way street, too. Do I encourage her? Do I help give her the spirit to go on? That's the kind of thing we need, isn't it? Our children need that, don't we? I don't know how you think it is, but at least for me, man, I never studied as hard as these kids study. I didn't study as hard in college as they study in junior high school. Not that that means anything necessarily, just the facts. And I wasn't bright either, that isn't the point. But they're under a lot of pressure. Just a lot of pressure. Boy, they need encouragement. Just drop by and sit down and see what they're studying. See how it's going today. But I think we can get so bound up in our world and so self-centered that we... And you know something? I read somewhere, and I think it's so true, that we sort of clamber over the little lives and lives right here next to us that need our encouragement to get to those people out there to whom we're going to minister. I remember one day as I was praying about this, "Lord, what should my ministry be?" And after I'd prayed and thought about it for a while, it seemed like this. My prime ministry is to the next person, be he 7, 17, or 70. I don't practice that much, but I like to work on it. Say, "Well, our target area is college students. Our target area is service." Fine. But my ministry should be to the next person. And that next person's in my own home, to build them up. Another one is to trust them. How you can build people up by trusting them. One day on the train coming back from California, and I'm sure sorry trains are going out of style. I'd love to take a day or two on a train. But I was just thinking about my own life, and I was outlined it for myself, not for anybody else, but just thought, well, let me see. And I thought about my life, and I thought, well, now, who has infected me the most? Who through my lifetime has meant most to me to build me up and to help me? Well, there was my dad. My first grade teacher, the manager of the Western Union office for which I worked, before that, my coach in high school, the manager of the Western Union office, Doss Trotman. Those would be the main ones. And then it suddenly dawned on me that all of them had one thing in common that I believe, I'm sure there are many other things that helped me, but seemed to help me the most. And you know what it was? Every one of them gave me to believe that they had confidence in me. That they trusted me. I had never had it hit me that forcibly before. And I have since realized that we all have an immense need that somebody have confidence in us. And that helps build people up. They say you give a dog a good name and he'll live up to it. Well, that's a terrible illustration, but give a child a good name, they'll live up to it. I have confidence in you. I believe in you. But I think there's a lot of tearing down. Now, you wouldn't do it. I can't trust you. Well, okay, they can't trust me. All right, that's it. I can't make the grade, so I won't. Then we can build up our families by developing the gifts and abilities of one another. Now, some of you know that my wife, Lucy, if you ask her to speak, Don't do it till the last minute, because it's torture from whatever she has been asked until the day comes. She just panics at the thought. Personally, from what I've heard, she doesn't do a very acceptable job. But there's some reason or other why she panics. So we have a little arrangement. I'll do the speaking in our family. But you know, she loves to do things for people. Make little things. Buy baby clothes. Buy material and make something for somebody. So we just have a little Dorcas fund, you know, from Acts there. This woman did things like this. So out of the income, we set aside a little money. So she's got some dough so she can buy some material and some things to make some things to help develop that ability and that gift and the satisfaction that comes with it. So I think we need to help one another. And we can do an immense amount, I think, to build up one another in our gifts. Someone else, they may be something that they love to express themselves. It's a fulfillment. Okay, let's let them do it. Then let's not compare one with the other. Talking about comparing one with another, you may have one child who gets straight A's and another one who just doesn't have it academically. So what do? Well, you've got... But the one that makes straight A's may be the poorest housekeeper you've got and the least interested in cooking, and the other one may be a terrific little housekeeper. Make a honey of a wife for somebody someday, and you better be the right guy too, because my name. Or take music. Music. Mr. Haymaker, an older man who really taught Billy Graham team how to put on crusades. He was their setup man for years. Raised four boys, and all of them turned out well. So, Mr. Haymaker, what is one of the greatest things that you believe that you did with your boys that they've turned out so well? He said, well, I could mention a number of things, but one of the greatest things was music. We had a great music teacher and instructor in their high school. And they all got involved in music and with instruments. This is something to encourage. I think it helps build. And then we shouldn't forget the value of inviting people to visit us in our home who would be of interest to the children. And work it out ahead of time so you can schedule a meal time so you got time to sit around and talk afterwards. Have the questions already worked out that you can ask the person that you know the background of something that will be of interest to your kids to help them make an impression there. Love binds and love builds. So this is a job, isn't it, of both husband and wife to take action, to bind, and to build. Yep, that's it. Well, it's been good. The Lord bless you and give you a safe trip home and make you a better husband, wife, parent, and son or daughter. We mustn't forget that. If Dad or Mom or both are still alive, we're still to honor my father and my mother. And we might have a little something to do there, too, that we may have neglected. Let's not forget that. Let's pray, shall we?